You were the original Pirate King on film, and now Johnny Depp is doing Pirates of the Caribbean 4. Have you seen those films?
I only saw the first one. I thought he was delightful, delicious, great. I'm also a Keith Richards fan, so I thought it worked great. And Rock and Rollers are pirates. A friend of mine who are in the rock and roll business. It's a piratical lifestyle. But, gee, you think they would have made Pirates of the Caribbean without Pirates of Penzance? Did I pave the way? No. I'm happy that it was so successful and that Johnny Depp was able to buy himself a nice island. So the irony of a pirate movie financing an island. Didn't even think about that. I thought, lucky bastard's got his own island. But for a pirate to have an island, even though I know that he's not a pirate, he's an actor who plays a pirate, still, I just noticed the irony of that.
I was talking to Sherry about this, and she said when you came in for ADR, it took her a second because she said, oh my god, he's not like Henry Harrison. He really is that good of an actor. How often do you get confused for characters that you play? Everything from Fish Called Wanda to Dave to the Extra Man.
Well, there's sort of two sides to that. I think there are people who think you're that guy, whoever, that psychopath in Fish Called Wanda, or you're Dave during the Bush administration. Why don't you run for president? We need you. First of all, I learned doing that part that it's a crappy job. No, thank you. But appreciate the thought. But also directors. I mean, I just did some ADR for Robert Redford for this film I did with him. Got there first, and then he came in, and we started chatting, and about 2 minutes later he said, oh my god, Kevin, it's you. He said, I've been looking at you for months and months in the editing room, and I'd look like this, and in his movie I had this beard and no mustache, and I looked like some kind of Quaker whack job. But directors see a lot of you in the editing room, not only in the filming, but they're stuck with you for quite a period of time. Yeah, it must be a shock. It's even happened to me. I see people. It's like, oh my god, I just did a play with them a year before, but you were wearing a doublet and hose and you had a sword. I didn't recognize you without your pirate hat. You know, when we see someone in a different milieu, then we're out of context. Suddenly they forget.
Are you talking about Cyrano?
Yeah, but it could be any. It could be a movie, too. Remember, I was your wife. Oh my god, you changed your hair.
That crossover between real life and characters. There are others, but The Emperor's Club with Emile Hirsch
and Paul Dano.
Yeah, I was leading to The Extra Man or Hayden Christensen in Life is a House, where you have these mentor types of roles. And I wonder, the experiences that you had with John Houseman early on, if there's any of that that plays into it at all.
There was nothing paternal about John Houseman. He was this sort of eminence whom, after I got out of school and everything, and he started the acting company, and he became no longer Mr. Houseman, but John, and you could actually talk to him. But he was just sort of this scary figure for the first couple of years. Joe Papp was a kind of mentor, but it was something in his spirit that affected me and attracted me. Joe would always come back after opening night of whatever Shakespeare I was doing, say, so what's next? What about? So I'd like to, let's do it. Next, and you made a commitment and he held you to it. And that was as close to a mentor. In terms of acting, one of my oldest friends who I was in college with began teaching while we were all part of a group that formed a theater company off campus in a coffee house. He started teaching and he's still coaching more than teaching. And he was a kind of mentor. He was able to talk about acting in a way that just inspired me. And I have continued to see him over the years. Just sometimes he'll read a script and we'll just talk about it. His name is Harold Guskin. He actually wrote a book called How to Stop Acting, which I actually gave him the title for because he always says, stop acting, because he teaches you to be, not to act, and to strip away all the kind of acting apparatus and paraphernalia and accoutrement and accessories, to play purely. So I guess that's a mentor. It's nothing like Henry Harrison. He's a very bright, down-to-earth, pragmatic, crazy, but not like Henry Harrison.
You said you were in school with him, right?
He was in graduate school, I was an undergraduate, yeah.
But you're of similar ages, so it still is interesting.
He was always an older, sort of wiser, venerable presence, even in the group. He acted, but he was mostly a director, and then he started teaching us. He said, you're all terrible, you have to have acting classes. Actually, he started teaching.
Talking about stop acting, you're always grounded in a reality, no matter how
thank you
larger than life your characters get. Who's that BS meter for you, where even some directors may be standoffish? Who does that for you and goes, you're doing too much? Do you do that for yourself?
Oh, I do it for myself, but I count on directors. Well, any director that I would trust would do that. Barry Kasdan would do it. Mm-hmm. Mike Nichols, when I did The Seagull with Mike Nichols, he gave me a great note when we had just moved out of the rehearsal room up to the stage. It was the Delacorte, the outdoor.
Yes,
huge,
yeah.
Huge. I was real at home there because I'd done many productions there. And he said, he's a writer, not an actor. Because I was playing Trigora.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, naturally the instincts take over to fill the stage, fill the space.
And especially there, because it just goes out into the open air.
Yeah, so the sky's the limit, literally. and you got to watch yourself. There's so many conventions, and we all fall into it ourselves. That's acting. People accept it. It's part of going to the theater. But the actors I think that we admire most are the ones who break the convention. They're not doing the conventional. They do it conventionally. And it's like, yeah, that's good. A little acted. You know what I mean? It's not even being actorish or, oh, she's a little actressy. There's just something acted. Real people, like as I like to refer to non-actors, will say, I don't know, it sounds like they were just saying lines. She bugs me or he bugs me.
They're indicating so much.
It can be someone who is indicating, someone who's what I call schmacting, which is like, okay. And that's why Harold called his book Stop Acting. That's something that the actor is hired because he knows how to self-direct. Some directors feel that they have to direct anyway. Even though you're doing it right, they think you want them to talk to you about something. I don't. I want to know when I've strayed from the path. Or you could do that less. Or you could do that more. I remember the first day's shooting of Fish Called Wanda. I kept saying, whew, too much, right? And John said, more. Too big? Bigger. You know, he'd seen The Big Chill. He went, and he said, you're so fucking boring when you're doing those. He wanted it big. But yeah, you need a director to tell you when it's too big and when it's not enough.
How influential was John Cleese on you from watching Monty Python early on, and then you guys worked together in Silverado and Fierce Creatures and, of course, A Fish Called Wanda? How big of an influence, and in what way did he influence your acting?
Well, long before I met him, I loved Monty Python. When I first saw the film, and now for something completely different, that was my first exposure before it was on the television here. They did a film of just sort of best of sketches. And I just thought, these are my people. I love this. I mean, I felt the same way when I saw Ricky Gervais do The Office. Yeah. This guy, not that's it. That's something.
Speaking of not acting, that.
Well, yeah, this is something different. I love this. I love this. So Cleese had an effect long before I met him. And then getting to know him, it's a whole other thing. There's the man. But I think I must have appropriated stuff from Monty Python. In fact, I remember when we were doing The Pirates of Penzance, when the director said, okay, I don't want any of you to listen to the doily cart. There's a tradition. You know about the doily cart company? They did all of Gilbert's.
It was
at the Savoy Theater. And for 100 years, each successive company was handed down the same, and on this line you do this, and this is how we do this. And it was like a prescribed way that if you're doing HMS Pinafore, it's done like this. And yeah, you could, I guess, bring your own thing to it, but within a very circumscribed stylistic format. And the director said, I want you to ignore the last 100 years of Gilbert and Sullivan. Forget everything you thought about Gilbert and Sullivan. I didn't really know much Gilbert and Sullivan. Let's pretend that this was written for us. And I said, oh, great. We did it in Central Park, and it's free. You knew they were getting their money's worth, and we just had fun. But I remember thinking, we don't have to ignore how comedy has evolved in the intervening 100 years since the doily cart. So Monty Python, Steve Martin, Jerry Lewis, whatever, all these other crazy things that have happened that could be part of our vocabulary. And the kind of absurdism of Monty Python, I think, probably affected my evolution of the Pirate King.
Yeah. All right, last one. I saw you working with the Count on Sesame Street. You and Phoebe doing that song.
How big is your bathtub?
Yeah, and he's actually measuring it. Did that come through Frank Oz, or was that something that you were doing?
I did something with Frank after In-N-Out, where he was Elmo, and my two kids came, and because he used to just kind of, yeah, I would talk to these kids, and my kids were just horrible. My son kept picking up the rod that moves the arm. And, you know, how does this work? Owen, you're not playing along. Just talk to Elmo. They never aired it. There was nothing usable.
Until you did this as a backup to that?
No, Sesame Street had asked me to come on a couple of times. Why would I do that? Then I had kids. They were watching Sesame Street. Well, that'll be fun. And the kids can come. And so I did How Big Is Your Bathtub with Phoebe. It's a really well-written song. It's a way of teaching kids to measure. So we kind of did it for the kids. I think they might have even watched it.
I was going to say,
I think it's the last thing of mine that they watched.